Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. You're going to feel like you're in a science class this morning. But it's not. It's a Srimad Bhagavatam class. And if you think this is something, wait till you see the same subject treated in the postgraduate study, Chaitanya Charitamrita. I'll hint. Okay, so we're going to read texts 26 through 29, and probably we'll also touch on text 30, text 26 through 29 from chapter 5, continues with the unfolding of the elements. We've already heard about the manifesting of false ego, and then false ego mixing with the mode of ignorance, or tamagun, the separating out from pradhan of sky. And then we're going to hear the next verses is the other four gross elements. Okay, so sky comes first, the most subtle of the five. Chapter 26 through 29. Translation reads, because the sky is transformed, the air is generated with the quality of touch, and by previous succession, the air is also full of sound, because sky is full of sound. So the air is also full of sound, and the basic principles of duration of life. Air, like life air. Sense perception, mental power, and bodily strength. When the air is transformed in course of time, remember that time is acting, that Kala Shakti. Nothing material happens without the influence of time. It's in reverse. Time is necessary for events. Time acts, time isn't stagnant, time is moving. Time moves the elements according to the will of the Lord. So, when the air is transformed in course of time and nature's course, fire is generated, taking shape with the sense of touch and sound. So the sense of touch comes with air. The sense of shape with fire. Since fire is also transformed, there's a manifestation of water full of juice and taste. As previously, it also has form and touch and is also full of sound. And water being transformed from all variegatedness on earth appears odorous. Earth carries odors. And as previously becomes qualitatively full of juice, touch, sound, and form respectively. The purport makes it the sequence a little bit easier. The whole process of creation is an act of gradual evolution, or one might say devolution, de-evolution, subtle to gross, and development from one element to another, reaching up to the variegatedness of the earth, as so many trees, plants, mountains, rivers, reptiles, birds, animals, and varieties of human beings. The quality of sense perception is also evolutionary or devolutionary, devolving. Namely, generated from sound. Sense perception comes from sound. Even materially. Spiritually also. So, the quality of sense perception is also evolutionary, namely generated from sound, then touch, and from touch to form. Each one of these things is like, you could write a book on it. So, taste and odor are also generated along with the gradual development of sky, air, fire, water, and earth. They're all mutually the cause and effect of one another. But the original cause is the Lord Himself. In plenary portion, as Mahavishnu, lying on the causal ocean of the Mahatattva. You need Sataputta to give class on this verse. He probably has. They probably have it recorded. As such, Lord Krishna is described in Brahma Samhita as the cause of all causes. And this is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita also. 10.8 as follows. Aham sarvasya prabhavo matak sarvam pravartate iti madvapa janti mambhuta bhava samandita. The qualities of sense perception if you remember sense perception evolves from air. But here he's saying the qualities of sense perception are fully represented in the earth because all of the elements are within the gross elements, air, sky, fire, and water within the earth. And they are manifested in other elements to a lesser extent. In sky, there is sound only. Whereas in the air, there is sound and touch. In the fire, there are sound, touch, and shape or form. And in the water, there is taste also, along with the other perceptions, namely sound, touch, and shape. In the earth, however, there are all the above-mentioned qualities with an extra development of odor also. Therefore, on the earth, there is a full display of variegatedness of life, which is originally started with the basic principle of air. And of course, air is started with the basic principle of sky. And sky is started with the basic principle of false ego mixing with, in contact with the mode of ignorance, which is manifested by Mahavishnu's glance over Pradhan. So he's the original cause. But just, you can see, so all those statements are correct, but the most immediate one is Therefore, on the earth, there is a full display of variegatedness of life, which originally is started with the basic principle of air. Then he expands, because it's... in the verse itself, when air manifests, then basic principles of the duration of life are manifest: sense perception, mental power, and bodily strength. Sense perception through touch, and then further, that sense perception is manifested in form, in taste, and in smell, because of the presence of air. Sense perception begins. Diseases of the body take place due to derangement of air within the earthly body of the living beings. Mental diseases result from special derangement of the air within the body, and as such, yogic exercises especially beneficial to keep the air in order, so that diseases of the body become almost nil by such exercises. When they are properly done, the duration of life also increases. And one can have control over death also by such practices, at least extend the duration of life, push the point of death further out. And the opposite is true. When the airs of life are disturbed, life duration decreases. A perfect yogi can have command over death and quit the body at the right moment when he is competent to transfer himself to a suitable planet. The bhakti yogi, however, surpasses all the yogis because, by dint of his devotional service, he is promoted to the region beyond the material sky and is placed in one of the planets of the spiritual sky by the supreme will of the Lord, the controller of everything. So, we could spend time drilling down on each one of these and if somebody was a PhD in some field of one of these things, sound and transmissions of sound, how technology transmits sound, I would imagine that everything that you find described within the Bhagavatam would minimally, it's not going to be contradictory. You know the phrase, it's not falsifiable by any, scientific discovery. There was that effort that was made by the Bhaktivedanta Institute. They invited Professor Henry Staff, I think a Nobel laureate from some university in California. He took a sabbatical, a little paid sabbatical, and he went to the Jewel Temple and spent something like a month or a month and a half studying the Sankhya philosophy of Lord Kapila Dev. And the mission was, it was BI funded, but it was, find out if there's anything to his knowledge that's discoveries in modern science or knowledge within modern science that would contradict that, you know how it goes. You can't say it's true. He can say, but he did say, it's not falsifiable. There's nothing. He was a very austere person. He was up at 4 o'clock every morning. I don't know if he attended Mangalarti, but he was up at 4 o'clock every morning commenting how pleasant it was to rise in the morning and hear songs. So he was a very regulated, strict person. at least strict in certain ways. And at the end, he wrote a little paper, and then he wrote, you know, an article. So in that little paper, it's like a little booklet, was published by the BI. There's nothing in modern science that would show that what he had just read is false. He can't, as a scientist, say it's true. You know, you understand the distinction, not falsifiable. So it still stands as theory because it's not falsifiable by modern science. So similarly, the principles that are described here, you know, the push and pull, the what's the cause and effect of the material manifestation. Sense perception, for example, sense perception beginning at the point of air, like the fan is blowing. And we can hear the sound of the blades of the fan spinning. At least sitting where I'm sitting, I can feel the air. So one is hearing, and the other is touch. Fire makes shape. We know we normally would think, well, earth makes shape, but fire makes shape. And there's fire element within the earth, but it's the fire element that brings the sense perception of shape. You could say, you know, sight. There's the touch through air, but there's the seeing with light, with a fire, with a shape. And then water, something that's like dried out, has no taste. But when it gets softened, then it something tastes. And then odor from earth. So practically the most important thing out of the whole sequence is through the process of this unfolding, there's original cause. That's the title of the chapter, The Cause of All Causes. So you can look at the effects, which are in turn causes of the next thing that produce certain effects, which then become causes of the next thing, which then produce effects, and so on. So the chain reaction of cause and effect. But there's an original cause. A couple other points just to repeat. The quality of sense perception is fully represented in the earth, that is to say, sound, touch, form, taste, and smell, or odor. Now, it hasn't yet described the sense, the senses of perception. It's describing the objects of the sense of perception along with the element. In other words, bodies haven't been formed yet, but just the warehouse, all the ingredients. Then another is that air has this important role, which Vedic practice or yogic practice deals with. You know, just like a physical therapist, they know details and details and details and details and details about which muscles and this muscle and that muscle, and you know, you do this thing, and it moves that muscle, it stretches and builds and so on. That's their job, that's their profession. And the movements of air within the body is also another science that can promote health, longevity, and mental equilibrium. And the goal of yogic pranayama is not health, long life, and mental equilibrium. The goal is to realize the source of air, the source of everything, in that condition of strong health, long life, and so on. That's lost if one falls into maya, one wants to be the enjoyer of the resources, this body, and that the body, whatever the body comes in contact with through the medium of the senses. God becomes lost, obscured. And the final point is that the bhakti yogi need not perform all the rigors of the yoga system, which ultimately is meant to transfer the soul to the spiritual realm, because by the performance of bhakti yoga, he is promoted to the region beyond the material sky and is placed in one of the planets of the spiritual sky by the supreme will of the Lord, the controller of everything. So it's not an independent endeavor program, it's a descending mercy program. And it's an easy choice to make. Option A and B. Option A, everything depends upon the effort that you make. Option B, we make effort and we add to that Krishna's mercy, the strength of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's a very easy choice to make. Except that we're attached to the conception, we're the doer and the enjoyer and the controller. Okay, text number 30. So far we've heard false ego interacting with the mode of ignorance. It produces the five gross material elements, and which in turn produce the five objects of the senses, or the sense perception. The senses have not yet been manifested, but the sense perception, the objects of sense perception, as subtle features of each of those. So now it's false ego interacting with the mode of goodness. Here's what Shukadeva Goswami says. From the mode of goodness, the mind is generated and becomes manifest. As also the 10 demigods controlling bodily movement. Such demigods are known as the controllers of directions, the controller of air, the sun god, the father of Daksha Prajapati, the Ashvini Kumaras, the fire god, the king of heaven, and the worshipable deity of heaven, the chief of the Adityas, and Brahmaji, the Prajapati, all come into existence. Purport. It's a 2-page purport. Vaikarika. It's in the verse. Vaikarika. First word in the verse. Is the neutral stage of creation. In the word for word, it's from the mode of goodness. Vaikarika is the neutral stage of creation, and Tejas is the initiative of creation. While tamas is the full display of material creation under the spell of the darkness of ignorance. Manufacture of the, quote, necessities of life in factories and workshops, excessively prominent in the age of Kali, or the age of the machine, is the summit stage of the quality of darkness. Such manufacturing enterprises by human society are in the mode of darkness because factually there is no necessity for the commodities manufactured. Human society primarily requires food for subsistence, shelter for sleeping, defense for protection, and commodities for the satisfaction of the senses. The senses are the practical signs of life, as will be explained in the next verse. Human civilization is meant for purifying the senses, and objects of sense satisfaction should be supplied as much as absolutely required, but not for aggravating artificial sensory needs. Food, shelter, defense, and sense gratification are all needs in material existence. Otherwise, in his pure, uncontaminated state of original life, the living entity has no such needs. The needs are therefore artificial. And in the pure state of life, there are no such needs. He said it three times so far. As such, increasing the artificial needs, as is the standard of material civilization, or advancing the economic development of human society is a sort of engagement in darkness without knowledge. By such engagement, human energy is spoiled, because human energy is primarily meant for purifying the senses in order to engage them in satisfying the senses of the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Lord, being the supreme possessor of spiritual senses, is the master of the senses. Rishikesha. Rishika means the senses, and Isha means the master. The Lord is not the servant of the senses, or in other words, he is not directed by the dictation of the senses, but the conditioned souls or the individual living entities are servants of the senses. They are conducted by the direction or dictation of the senses, and therefore material civilization is a kind of engagement in sense gratification only. The standard of human civilization should be to cure the disease of sense gratification. And one can do this simply by being an agent to satisfy the spiritual senses of the Lord. The senses are never to be stopped in their engagements, but one should purify them by engaging them in pure service of sense gratification of the master of the senses. This is the instruction of the whole Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna wanted to first of all satisfy his own senses by his decision to not fight with his kinsmen and friends, but Lord Sri Krishna taught him the Bhagavad Gita just to purify Arjuna's decision for sense gratification. Therefore, Arjuna agreed to satisfy the senses of the Lord, and thus he fought the battle of Kurukshetra as the Lord desired. And there's another paragraph, long paragraph, comparing karmis, gyanis, and yogis and devotees, with a conclusion that says, be a devotee. Try to please the senses of the personality guided, because Gyan, Karma, and Yoga don't have that intention. And so one is still entangled. There may be artificial restraint, but it's artificial. And the nature of the soul is not realized. Why is all this in the Bhagavatam? Why is it one of the important 10 topics of the Srimad Bhagavatam? It's important to understand, as Prabhupada is referring to the verses of Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna says he's the source of everything, he means it. It's not just like, you know, mythology. You know, the creationists have a hard time convincing the scientists, the creationists that are based upon the biblical description that says in 7 days everything, you know, the Old Testament version. This is far more compelling. For say, supposing somebody's not like a dedicated atheist, they're a fence sitter. Then they look at, you know, over here is the atheists that are doing all these, you know, technically demonstrable things. It says, you know, looks good. And over there, the theists, what are they doing? They say God created everything. And they see the push-pull. They see the cause and effect. So it looks like, you know, laws of nature to them. That's what's going on. That's the laws of nature. God created everything. So it gives them, it gives strength to the statement that God creates everything. He's the source of everything. There's no truth superior to Him. It's a little bit, you know, it's like the of the six doctrines, one of them is the atomic doctrine. Same thing as modern science, that everything is based upon nature and the laws governing nature. It's like Krishna was giving the argument to his father, that karma mimamsa argument. You don't need to worship Indra. You don't need to worship the demigods, because what can the demigods do? They can only give you as much as your karma permits. They're limited by the law of karma. And if you, you know, act sinfully, then they restrict according to the laws of karma. They're just agents of the law of karma. The law of karma is supreme, so we should just do our and forget these demigod guys. But what we're really dependent upon is Govardhan Hill, because Govardhan Hill supplies nice grasses and so many things, and we have our relationship with Govardhan Hill. Let's worship Govardhan Hill. It's an atheistic, the first part is an atheistic argument. So, Krishna being the Supreme Lord, he knows all arguments, including the atheistic ones. And Vyasadeva also knows the atheistic ones, the Gotama theory of all there is matter and the laws governing matter. And there is matter and there's laws governing matter. But how does matter even come into being? What to speak of the laws? What to speak of supervising those laws? So it gives a detailed description. Krishna is the original source of everything. And he supervises the unfolding of that creation and then the using of the elements of creation to make forms, etc. It continues. There's some verses that I have completed almost all of the verses from Canto 1. And there's some sections in chapter in Canto 2 I haven't completed. And now you're understanding why. They're very technical. And for some audiences, it's like, what was that? So, I'm trying to complete them. Any comments or questions? You had your hand up first. Go ahead.
Maharaj, you made some statements which I couldn't understand. For example, you said that sense perception.
I said that what?
You made some statement.
Yes. What, and what was that?
Is that you could understand for me?
Okay. The guy got the introduction, but what was the difficult part? Go ahead.
So you made me say that sense perception evolves from sound.
Sense perception
evolves from sound.
Sense perception evolves from air. Sense perception evolves from air.
Then four ego interacts with motor elements, and then five gross elements comes out. So four ego interacts with the motor elements, and then five gross elements.
Yeah, within each of the five gross elements, there's the subtle form of that element. As with sound, as with sky, the subtle form of sky is sound. With air, the subtle form of air is touch, which is the beginning of sense perception. Now, ask your question again. Have I answered your question, or... What should you do about it?
Should I try to analyze and try to understand?
Well, you're a scientist. What should you do with this? I mean, you know, the main thing I expressed, Prabhupada expressed in the purport, I said it again, and I'll now say it again. The main thing is that everything comes from the personality of Godhead. It comes from the personality of Godhead because of the desire for the living entity for separate enjoyment. And so he creates a sandbox, a little playground, a place where the living entity that wants to enjoy independently from him can go and try to enjoy independently from him. So he makes an arrangement. They're his energies, and they just unfold subtle to the influence of time and his will. They unfold one unto the next. If you understand that, that's sufficient. If you like, you can go further and further because the Bhagavatam presents it. How does this connect with that? How does that connect with the next thing? How does the next thing connect with the next thing? There is a connection. It's not random. It's highly organized. And if you like, you can go through the highly organized and try to sort it out. And it meets, you know, it's there's room for enormous research in some lab somewhere to understand how this connects with that, connects with the other thing. And, you know, unless the government gives, it's perceived as a war technology opportunity, they're not going, you're not going to get the funding for it. Or some commercial company feels they can make some money out of it, there's not going to be any funding for it. So largely, it's just for sense gratification purposes. Or, you know, destruction purposes, defense, so-called defense, destruction purposes. But, you know, it's the opportunity for research is there by understanding, you know, the cause and effect. Like Prabhupada, for example, Prabhupada said they have discovered fire weapons, but they haven't discovered the water weapon. So maybe somebody will want to, you know, do some research on a water weapon. Get a whole bunch of government money and find out how to make a water weapon. And, you know, by studying these principles, they can perhaps do it. And it, which can be done by mantra, like Durvasa Muni created a fire weapon. Go kill Maharaj Ambarish. He didn't have to go get a research grant from the government. So, assuming that you don't feel the compelling need to do any research on this, you can be satisfied with understanding, in principle at least, then you can drill a little bit further according to your disposition. And if you don't, if you haven't drilled further on it, does it mean you won't be able to go back to Godhead? No. Understand the principle. Is that all right? Is that all right? You want something more? Okay. Something else? You had something?
Actually, I had a similar question. That is it necessary to understand these topics to develop devotion?
No. But there's a reason why they're there. That's why I was sharing why they're there. For those who might challenge, you know, why do you believe in all of this? I mean, you know, you can see the effect of the push and pull, the cause and effect. So seeing is believing. Why do you believe in something you can't see? This remote cause. Humbug. Rubbish. Mythology. And so you can stand before the person and say, if there's a science, my dear sir, please control your passions and consider. There's a science of how the elements unfold one under the next. And one who understands these signs can do, you know, amazing things. What amazing things? Let's take, you know, how much money is the government spending on health care? And how much money are people spending on health care? So try a little of, you know, this hatha yoga or the pranayama. And you can do wonderful things and save yourself a lot of money. That's practical, isn't it? But, you know, the purpose is not just saving you some money and having good health and have health care. The purpose is understanding the original cause. But that which understands this science also knows the science of the original cause. That's the purpose of it. It nurtures faith in the original cause. They're not the same. The distinction I can't describe, but they're not the same. Right? Read specifically. It's not like, you know, and that's life air. And you exhale and your life air is gone. So it's not that. It's another. Certainly, it takes high material qualification, not spiritual qualification, to access subtle powers. One's consciousness has to be very refined to access subtle laws. All that, if I've understood your question correctly, powers are accessible for persons with subtle consciousness, but subtle consciousness isn't spiritual. Subtle consciousness is material. Refined material consciousness. It is described very, very bluntly or directly in Nectar of Devotion. It's that Prabhupada analyzes, or Rupa Goswami analyzes. Each of the mystic cities, Ashta cities, and they're simply material perfections that materialists with their machines are also trying for, and the yogis are, without machines are trying for. It's material. It's just understanding of subtle laws of nature and manipulating those subtle laws of nature because of subtle consciousness, subtle material consciousness. And does it require spiritual qualification? No. It requires sense control and mind control, but those aren't spiritual. It's subtle material. Rather, the process, the same process that the yogi follows, if that yogi follows, for example, what Kapiladeva teaches, then he fixes, he uses that capacity, that subtle capacity, to fix his mind upon Paramatma. Of course, you can't do that unless there's mercy. You can't see Paramatma unless Paramatma says, "Here I am." So the mechanical discipline of the yoga system has its advantage, just like, you know, anything else has its advantage if you use it in a proper way, or it has a disadvantage if you use it in an improper way. Does that address your question? It wasn't exactly true. Because Arjuna, he had skills, but those skills were material. What Drona had taught him, it was subtle material skill. The archery skill and so on, so on, so on. So his real qualification was not he's a great archer. His real qualification was he's Krishna's dearmost friend and devotee. And therefore he was victorious, not because of his prowess. He had skill. No doubt. He was the best archer. He was the best student. Go ahead.
Maharaj, this is a very deep and deep topics of science, and I really want to learn more about them. So, what qualifications are required to learn more about them?
Purity and a good teacher. One person that understood about these things very, 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 very finely was Sataputta, and he's now expired. But there are recordings of his lectures on these topics and other things that he's written on these topics, and he would be a fine teacher. Now, he didn't have someone to go to. He didn't have a Sataputta to go to. But he had Prabhupada's books, and that was his teacher. And then there are certain principles that Prabhupada stressed over and over again that are the basis of how he proceeded. You know, he was specifically requested, you can say, empowered by that request of Srila Prabhupada to do certain services in that area of Krishna consciousness. And he had great faith in Prabhupada and his instructions. And brilliant. So that's one place. After his decease, some devotees have been gathering all of his lectures and, you know, material so they could have it as a, whatever you call that, a repository of his work. Library. Anything else? Yes?
The question of dominant modern science seems to be complementary to the question of modern science. Because in modern science, they say that sound cannot travel through space.
They say that what?
Sound cannot travel through space.
How can they say that? Because they're using systems of broadcasting sound and images through space, aren't they? Isn't it? Because they beam a signal, it bounces off a satellite that's in space, and the signal comes back and you can hear it. Isn't that how it works? Sound travels through space. Okay. Thank you very much. So the Prabhupada can tell.